Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans and their families succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 311 with Chris Beatty.
Usually the running joke is I play with dogs. I play with and train dogs. But to be honest, it's, you know, we're taking every dog that we could potentially get our hands on, either it's a disabled veteran or a veteran family, you know, whatever it takes, we're training dogs to be the best dogs they can be. And a lot of times that we're able to make them service dogs for their disabled need or their family's need. Meaning the dog may do medication reminders, you may assist with mobility or motility, picking up objects, opening and closing doors, providing, you know, tasks and things that a caregiver would, and now they have a dog that's trained to do it, and just assisting in social situations or keeping that veteran on a routine and a schedule.
My primary intention for this episode is to raise awareness around a great cause, which is SemperCanine.org. We spend the bulk of this interview talking about how Chris and his team are training service animals to support veterans, either with physical or emotional needs. It's really inspiring to see and to hear Chris's story. And so while we are primarily focusing on the organization and how you could help spread awareness to help other veterans or contribute either your time or resources to support a really worthwhile cause, I'd love for you to really pay attention to the extraordinary example that Chris is in terms of two things. First of all, someone who is really living in alignment with their values. And that's not easy. He talks about how he and his family have gotten by on ramen at times and made a lot of financial sacrifices to build this nonprofit, which is doing a really good work in the world. But that's not easy to do. And so I think he's a great example of that. And then second of all, I think he's a great example of someone who, in the Marine Corps, built up career capital, outside of the military, continued to hone and refine that career capital, and then went on to forge his own nonprofit. And I think it's just a great example of how you can leverage your military experience on the other side. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with a link to everything we discuss, as well as a text transcript of the entire episode, thanks to Kathleen Dillon. You'll also find over 300 episodes just like this, all for free at beyondtheuniform.org. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Chris. Well, joining me today in Woodbridge, Virginia, my guest is Christopher Beatty. Chris, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hello, thank you.
So for listeners, here's the quick background on Chris. He is the co-founder and executive director of Semper Canine Assistance Dogs. He served in the Marine Corps as a 5812 military working dog handler and specialized search dog team leader for over 7 years, including three combat tours in Iraq with explosive detection dogs. After his military service, he spent a year doing government contract work in Afghanistan, about 3 years doing contract work with a detection dog in and around Washington, D.C. He also completed a 9-month internship with a national nonprofit to create a program training rescue dogs to be service dogs. He was awarded the Washingtonian of the Year for 2017 by Washington Magazine and selected as Evan Williams American Made Hero. Maybe to start things off, Chris, you bump into someone, maybe a fellow Marine Corps vet on the street, and he says, hey, Chris, what do you do for a living? How do you answer that these days?
Usually the running joke is I play with dogs. I play with and train dogs. But to be honest, it's, you know, we're taking every dog that we could potentially get our hands on, either it's a disabled veteran or a veteran family, you know, whatever it takes, we're training dogs to be the best dogs they can be. And a lot of times that we're able to make them service dogs for their disabled need or their family's need.
Where did this come from? So what was the kind of driving force behind starting Semper Canine Assistance Dogs?
More than likely, we've always said it was need. You know, I needed something outside of the government contracting world. You know, I needed, hey, I'm training dogs to do their best potential. How can we do something that's useful, fill a hole in the veteran industry? And it really was providing service dogs that are special and individually trained for them, their lifestyle, whether they're active duty, whether they're in the med board process, or even post-transition into civilian life. So we try to give them, you know, opportunities within their veteran community and within assisting our organization, you know, gives them kind of an opportunity to be able to give back. But, you know, we're training as many service dogs in training as we can handle at a time. And a lot of these veterans are training dogs for other veterans, and they're training dogs, you know, that will, could potentially become their service dog.
How many dogs is that from time to time?
We, right now we're scaled for 10 to 20 dogs a year. And I think we currently have 18 service dogs in training. I'm in the process of placing dogs with veterans between now and their graduations. Their next graduation is sometime in November, maybe beginning at the end of October, but have their graduation. So I'm essentially starting to place those dogs with the veterans, and the veterans are using the dogs in their everyday lives in preparation for essentially graduation week. We're adding new things to the way we're training dogs. We're making sure we've catered that dog's abilities, as well as what we're training the veteran how to handle the dog specifically to their disabled needs and the lifestyle that they want to live.
Can you give a couple examples? Like, what are some examples of what these dogs are doing to support the veteran?
We generally use the disability mini aid tasks, you know, as a whole, meaning the dog may do medication reminders. You may assist with mobility or motility, picking up objects, opening and closing doors, pushing buttons, you know, things like that. If that veteran's potentially in a wheelchair, providing, you know, tasks and things that a caregiver would, and now they have a dog that's trained to do it and bond with them. And a lot of what we train our dogs is also, you know, with post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, and military sexual trauma. Meaning we're training the dogs towards psychological health, which could include reacting to certain behaviors. It could be facilitating certain behaviors. It could be just assisting in social situations or keeping that veteran on a routine and a schedule, just like a guide dog does for someone who's is blind or has limited visibility. Just like a hearing dog, you know, but I affectionately call them mental health mobility service dogs.
I love the thought of this holistic approach where it seems like there is the physical component, which obviously makes sense, but also the emotional, mental, psychological component. And it seems like both of those are equally valuable to holistically address supporting the veteran.
Yeah, and there's a lot of weight being added to what you call non-traditional treatments or atypical treatments for any disability. You know, there's daily advancements within the medical world as far as the pharmaceutical side of what we do, but even that indirect type of therapy, whether it's just animal-assisted activities or even animal-assisted therapy. But we're teaching dogs to provide tasks and work that are very relatable to what a caregiver would provide. So, you know, anything that helps us accomplish our mission, which is just to enhance the quality of life of disabled veterans. And a lot of that is with the, I hate to say that, as many programs as we're currently running with, you know, whatever dogs we could potentially get our hands on and we can, you know, afford at the time.
What is your day-to-day life look like? Could you give listeners a sense of kind of what maybe a typical day looks like or what sorts of things you're doing during the week?
Unfortunately, I serve several hats within the hierarchy of Semper Canine. So I kind of had to juggle my day between being an executive director, which is a lot of phone calls and emails and, I hate to say, Facebook lives, you know, things like that I've got to really start doing just to promote what we're doing. And it's a lot of things that I've held back from, but day to day, you know, I'm taking care of, I have a personal dog as well as I have a facility dog, which is was one of our first service dogs in training. And he couldn't quite be a service dog and, you know, and he was a good fit for us bringing in new dogs. So, you know, when we have new puppies here, or have a new service dog in training, it's, you know, essentially I start every day like I was a, you know, a disabled veteran, you know, teaching this dog exactly how I want them to help me. and I'm pulling out the behaviors that they're good at, you know, through positive reinforcement, using treats, direction training, you know, showing them exactly what objects mean and how they work, you know, and finding that, you know, finding what that dog is good at, whether it's pushing a button, opening, closing doors, you know, picking up objects, getting this or that, or what we call Velcro work, you know, which is, you know, just being very attentive to the handler and, you know, providing pressure, you know, following obedience commands, jump up on their lap, you know, hey, if you see me tapping my foot or you see me, you know, fidgeting, biting my fingernails, you know, even an emotional outburst, you know, crying, screaming, yelling, things like that, where the dog tries to, you know, just be there for them. And it may be through pressure, it may be through tactile stimulation, but, you know, it could be distracting the veteran from and making them aware of their behavior. And a lot of that from the home standpoint, you know, is being able to get that veteran out into public and doing things that are make them a good citizen, make them a good, you know, representative of their military careers.
That's really incredible. I mean, it makes me think of the, I can imagine how people can get stuck in an emotional response, especially people who have been in pretty extreme situations in the military and can kind of get, be in that spot, and to have the dog be a way of like bringing them back to the present moment, bringing them back to where they are rather than wherever their head is at that moment. That's pretty powerful, as well as the thought of just getting them outside, getting them interacting with people, which is incredible. Could you share any, maybe not success stories, but like some of the impact that you've seen from the canines?
You know, as a whole with an organ, as an organization, you know, being a nonprofit, you know, our connection to the veteran community is what I really pride ourselves on, you know, that we're trying to find, you know, any type of lifestyle that a veteran has, you know, that's high, well, we hate to use the terms high functioning and low functioning. But, you know, really I think our majority of our impact comes to just the families. You know, we're unique that we cater the training, we kind of cater the dog, you know, we use rescue dogs and even purebred dogs, but we have such a broad type of temperament and types of dogs that these veterans can that fits their lifestyle. They look, you know, every one of our dogs kind of looks different because almost every one of the veteran that comes through looks different. Their lifestyle is different. It doesn't matter what, it could be in the same branch, same unit, or in the same mission, you know, got injured in the same, you know, incident, you know, and they come out and they just happen to, they're going to have different lives. They're going to want to lead different lives. So, you know, we try to cater our dogs specifically to that. And a majority of our veterans are their families. You know, some of them work, some of them, you know, are retired and do philanthropic work, or they may volunteer in their veteran community, whether it's through, you know, American Legion of VFWs. But a lot of them also come back to us, you know, many of our, and I've seen it all over the service dog industry, especially the veterans, the service dogs being provided to veterans, that there's an involvement there, that you've got them learning to train dogs, and they may go on and help their neighbor who's, you know, a Vietnam veteran. You know, they help them try to train. And another thing that makes our organization unique to that is, you know, I'm trying to teach, you know, we're not a schoolhouse, but, you know, I like to say that every veteran that leaves here is he knows how his dog was trained. He was involved with the training of several service dogs. You know, he's seen the physical effects that dogs can help assist with, and he's also seen the psychological, you know, and that psychiatric, you know, assistance, whether it's, you know, specifically with what the dog was doing, or just the fact that veteran can take the dog out in the public. That dog is, you know, perfectly well-behaved, and he's also an ambassador to, you know, to other service dogs and organizations. You know, so there's a lot of uniqueness to it, but, you know, it really comes down to, you know, helping those veterans become great citizens and maxing out their potential, you know, in any way that we can. But I see, you know, as a side note, I'd see the lives of the children change. There's a lot of talk about, you know, that secondary post-traumatic stress, you know, that comes from children. And, you know, a veteran who gets out of the basement, doesn't drink so many beers, is so, you know, aggressive and snappy, he's got something to do. He's motivated because he's got this dog that he is required to, you know, maintain training and maintain tasks and keep the work going, and recording all this, you know, just very, very similar as they would have operated in the military. So it transitions really well to the civilian world, gives them goals, kind of gives them something to do. And then, you know, the side to that is a lot of our veterans and their families get involved with us, you know, as volunteers or as staff members, you know, and as we're growing, we're able to provide, you know, opportunities for veterans to, you know, work with other veterans and help train more dogs. And the more trainers we have and the more dogs we have, the more potential service dogs we can provide those who need them.
That's great. And you mentioned rescue shelters. Could you talk a little bit more about where you're getting the dogs from and how that works?
A vast majority of our dogs come from our rescue partner, which is Operation Paws for Homes. And they're I like to call them a satellite rescue, meaning they pull dogs from all over the world, but they've pulled dogs from all over the U.S. on a regular basis. So it gives me a lot of puppies to look at, a lot of younger dogs that are, you know, before they've been taught any bad behavior. You know, it's what I like to call the cream of the crop, you know, I get from my location. But we also get dogs that are donated from breeders. You know, we love labs, especially black labs and yellow labs. You know, I mean, I've worked with so many different dogs and different breeds, and I assess every dog, you know, for their potential. I don't really care what their background was. You know, I want to know, and I want the healthiest dogs possible. And, you know, I'm looking into 2020, where we're probably can hopefully double the production of service dogs that we're currently doing to, you know, almost 50 dogs a year. Cause I've got more veterans to help than I have dogs available. So it's important that we find, you know, a lot of, you know, any dog out there that's has a good potential. You know, we have zero problem. My team has no problems with reading about the dog. You know, hey, tell me what makes this dog, you know, a great family pet that could potentially pass our, you know, our training and our, you know, our testing. So, you know, that's the kind of the thing we try to promote, you know, but it really comes down to trying to find as many good dogs as we can and train them to be great service dogs for veterans and their families.
How long does that process take of, receiving a dog and training them and then eventually passing them on to the veteran?
It changes. I used to use different ranges of dogs. I hate making 6 months, you know, 12 months, 18 months, you know, all kinds of ranges. But, you know, I've learned, you know, 40 plus dogs in that it all just depends on every dog is so different. You know, I just went and visited a service dog organization down in Florida that I really respect, Canines for Warriors, and they're doing a phenomenal job down there. And, you know, I got to see how we, you know, two organizations that started with the same goal in mind, you know, and we had conversations. They had seen our dogs, we'd seen their dogs, we'd been working within the service dog industry to make it better and easier for veterans. And you know, we created the Association of Service Dog Providers for Military Veterans. We looked at how can we change legislation to help these veterans, to help them get funding and help these organizations that are providing these dogs free of charge to veterans, you know, and saying, hey, there's a lot of veterans that are losing life to suicide, you know, to, you know, problems just adjusting to the military transition. You know, we're not spitting out as many veterans as many service members retiring out and getting out of active service that are doing things. You know, there are great veterans out there running great companies, but you see a theme that these veterans run their own business because they've shown that military model works even in the civilian world. And, you know, and I hate to say a veteran really can only understand another veteran. You know, we, no matter what branch or what service you, what lifestyle, what, you know, back farm of Kentucky or small town in Georgia, you know, coming from Manhattan, you know, whatever it is, no matter, you know, they come together, they learn all the same. They all dealt with the same thing. They all made that sacrifice to go out and you know, better their community, better their family, you know, protect their country, you know, whatever it is they, whatever reason they joined the military for, you know, there are a lot of service dog organizations and veteran service organizations out there that are, you know, veterans are, you know, great within those positions, you know, so, and you also have a lot of veterans that do not function well and, you know, in that civilian life and giving them opportunities to do something, but also just finding the niche within the civilian world that works best for them and their challenges, their limitations, but giving them the chance to succeed and Go on. I think I completely blew off your question, by the way.
No. This is great. One question that came up when you were saying that is, who is eligible for these service dogs?
So all of our dogs are free of charge to military veterans. A lot, many organizations put limitations on, era that they served on, where they live, what location, are they able to travel? Whether they have other dogs in the home, whether they have children married, where they live in the country, work lifestyle. There's a ton of things that we have to look at as an organization when we're deeming whether, we can help them. So every organization is different, but personally, at Sabre Canine, it's, a disabled veteran who, has gotten approval from a doctor, a physician that has seen them over a period of time, regardless of their disability. And they're essentially recommending, hey, what they know about service dogs fits the need of this person's disability, fits their lifestyle, and they're recommended to us. And it's that organization, whether it's a nonprofit or a for-profit, our dogs are all free of charge because we're a nonprofit. It's built into our bylaws that we do not buy, breed, or sell dogs. We do all the fundraising. We do apply for grants, whether it's in the community and government grants as well. But a lot of vast majority of our funding comes from just the public assistance, meaning charities and organizations, funds, that are privately ran, that provide money for organizations like ourselves. But people who just meet us and know us and love what we do, and they provide, those personal donations. We have, tons of opportunities to fundraise. I love our community engagement, because we give our volunteers an opportunity to go out and go to these events, see things, attend them. They get to be as a patron, but they get to enjoy it, and they get to show off our dogs, and they get to promote what we do. And that's what's the best part of being the executive director of an organization like this is, I get praise for everything everybody does before me, or under me, but purely, I give all of our volunteers and all of our charity partners, anybody who's assisted Sabre Canine in any way, whether it's directly or indirectly through financial support or through their volunteerism, that we're successful because of them. A big, big thank you to all their hard work. I've had to transition, from the, my a lot of times I was the first one who trained the dog, for 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 months, whatever it was, and turn them to a canine coach, and I would start the next couple of dogs or whatever. And now I've been essentially ousted by everybody. Our volunteer group has grown so large that they're pretty much training dogs. They don't even need me. I feel bad, but I've done too good of a job training them how to train service dogs, and I get to, be the executive director a little bit more. But I still have a firm connection, and I train every single veteran that comes through here, and they know from the beginning that, I'm putting my word on that dog. I promise I'll always be there for you and that dog as long as you make yourself available to me, in the organization. No matter what services we provide in 5 years, 10 years, a lifetime program, they're always welcome to come back. We're welcome to help them, continue to train their dog, make it even better, but also giving them, volunteer opportunities and ambassador and mentorship opportunities. We're getting too big. This podcast will last like, or this recording will end up lasting 3 hours if I try to explain it all.
That's great. It's a sign of success that you're being forced out of your role and into the more of that executive director role. If someone listening is fired up for themselves or for someone they know, and they think, man, this would really benefit me or this person, what does the process look like of, from hearing this podcast to actually interacting with your team or getting on a list or making their way towards getting that service animal?
For us, just the best way to apply for a service dog is going through our website, which is sabrecanine.org. There's plenty of opportunities to do a bunch of different things. If it's a veteran who's applying for a service dog, either reading everything about us, or any organization they're applying for a service dog, read as much as you can find out about it. Do your research, check them out. We put everything on our website. You know, I've tried to do interviews like this so I can better explain it, but they apply for a service dog. You know, we deem whether they're eligible and we're able to provide a service dog for them. They, you know, they get approved, and it's unfortunately go on a waiting list that is continually growing. But I try to work with the veteran I can work with the quickest and the fastest, you know, that I have a dog available for them, training as many dogs as I can. They apply for a dog, and, you know, we essentially set a date that, hey, I can start working with you on this date, and we'll work with them, you know, from then on, you know. And I try to, you know, make it, you know, veterans who are waiting or on that waiting list, so they we have different events that they can attend. We have different, I wouldn't say volunteer opportunities, but we have, you know, they're open and welcome to come and see our dogs, meet our dogs, talk to our people, you know, continue researching us. You know, they may have applied for dogs from four different organizations, and I'm not saying I want to, you know, because we were collectively the industry is sharing these dogs, you know, and we're, you know, everybody does a different has a different way of doing it, because it's just really hard to reproduce the same thing over and over and over, because veterans change, you know, over time. But, you know, we work with veterans for 6 months, you know, sometimes as little as 6 weeks. You know, I'd like to be able to see that, you know, say that, you know, in my next year Super Canine, we can take a veteran and within 20 days that I can make that veteran a service dog handler and make them, you know, and serve them even faster and quicker, and maybe, and hopefully, you know, a little more efficiently. And that's what we've been spent the last 5 years trying to fine tune and get to that. And I'm looking forward, really forward to 2020, because I know we're going to do great things. I got a lot of veterans to help. I hate to say I have a long waiting list, and it's killing me to the core to see, you know, the applications continue to come in. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, just you know, dissuade anyone from, you know, applying for a service dog, you know, but the waiting list across the industry is long. So it's going to take, you know, a village. You know, we're all, every corner of the country is going to have to band together and find the best dogs and find these dogs and provide, and, you know, find them a training organization they can go to and, you know, and potentially become a service dog. Or, you know, the money is out there to be spent on dogs. Just finding dogs is the hardest part, because the veteran applicant list is growing really, really fast. Every day we got a veteran coming out or veteran getting injured that is eventually going to need a service dog, and we can't train dogs fast enough. So we need dogs.
I'm appreciating the complexity of your business, and that every dog is unique. Every dog's background is unique. Their capabilities is unique. And as you said, every veteran's needs are unique. And the thought of juggling these two balls simultaneously, of having applicants, having dogs, being the matchmaker, training the person as well, it seems overwhelming. And I'm just, in the back of my mind, I'm like wondering, like, what is the cost for a single dog? You're talking about potentially a year and a half to train a dog. In my mind, I'm like, man, this seems like $100,000 plus just for one dog to be placed. Are you open to sharing, like, what the costs look like for training a single animal?
It varies. You know, I think, and I couldn't tell you exact numbers, you know, I do remember how the progression has gone as we've gotten better at it, as the organization has grown. But, you know, I mean, you could easily say it takes $20,000 to train every service dog, you know, but that's an industry average. You know, it's the organization's job and my job to make sure, hey, can we train this dog faster? Can we train him cheaper? You know, is there ways that we can cut our costs? And I think we as an organization sit at, you know, at the rate that it takes us to spend 12 to 15 to 18 months to train that dog from, you know, a puppy. It takes $15,000+ easily. So a lot of it's time, you know, or it really comes to, finding dogs. I hate to say that's always going to be my problem, you know, and I think that's from every organization I've talked to, you know, finding dogs and training them fast enough is the hardest part. You know, I'd like to say, you know, $20,000 is the industry average. I know the PAWS Act, and hopefully not to misquote it, you know, the new reintroduction, the way it's written, it will provide up to $25,000 each dog. So these organizations continue to replicate the same thing, you know, whether they have a breeding program, you know, or they have a rescue program, or, you know, whether the veteran is, you know, this type of disability, this type of disability, you know, no matter what it is, that industry average is only going to probably get higher, you know, as time progresses. So it's our job to kind of find out where we can trim the fat, you know, if you will. But to really say, you know, what is the actual cost of a service dog, and how are these organizations getting that money replaced so they can continue, you know, training the next dog?
Well, that leads into another question I had. So let's say someone's listening and your mission resonates or this cause resonates. What's a way that they can support you right now?
Our website has, you know, plenty of ways to volunteer. There's usually some form of volunteer meeting coming up, whether it's a coordinator's meeting or a volunteer orientation. We also have events that are going on year round. Some of them are regular, some of them are, you know, quarterly, some of them are purely based on, you know, the community engagement, whether it's motorcycle clubs, whether it's fundraisers, whether it's, you know, a bunch of events that the organization has going on to help us grow our mission and help us build our facility. There's plenty of ways to get involved. You know, almost all of them start with the website. That's just 2019, I hate to say, but, you know, give us a call. We'd gladly answer questions, shoot us an email, you know, contact. There's somebody manning the emails at all times. And if you have a question, or all of our 990s are on our website. I think we're still waiting on our audit to come in. So we'll have everything out there, you know, that shows we're not blowing money and having big old parties and doing crazy. You know who you are.
Could you share a little bit more about the family integration program?
Yeah. So when we first started the organization, you know, we had two rules that we were always going to stick to that would never change. We would never charge veterans for anything, you know, any of the services we're providing, you know, we would never charge them for a dog. And then we would ensure that we were thinking about the families. We were including the families as much as we possibly could. And really the family integration came from just trying to, you know, find something for the spouses. They were very interested in what was going on, which I understand. They had a lot of questions about, what do I do? How do I get taught this? You know, and we started to include that early on to say, hey, you know, we're providing this to veterans, you know, so he can get out and work. That may only be 8, 9, 10 hours a day. What are we worried about the time that he's at home? You know, that he's trying to be a father on the weekends, that he's trying to be a spouse, you know, for he's maybe taking care of several kids. He may be a stay-at-home mother or father. You know, there was a lot of things that we wanted to take into account, and that's where that individual training comes. You know, it may be providing, you know, some direction, some opportunities, some, you know, engagement with the spouse or the family, including them in the training. So I'm not just sending them off, okay, now I want you to go home and you just learn this stuff, and I want you to go home and teach everybody at home that, you know, which works for a lot of veterans. It, you know, it's been proven that as a very successful model. You know, I'd love to be able to adopt that as part of what we do. But, you know, I see that, you know, families need to be involved, and kind of gives us a way to, you know, keep track, you know, of the veteran without having to pressure them too much. It gives us, you know, opportunities for them to continue to practice. You know, we're a small organization. We've only graduated, you know, we've only finished 40 service dogs. So in that time, you know, we've sent dogs out there to be that, but, you know, we're going against organizations who have hundreds of dogs out there, you know, and some may be good, some may be bad. So we don't, our impact isn't as great on a grand scale. Excuse me. You know, our impact isn't as grand as I would like it to be, but we're trying to get there. And, you know, and I think the more we train, the more, you know, more dogs we produce, we'll set the example within the industry. You know, and I would love to see, you know, or all organizations, you know, as much as you possibly can to cater, you know, to provide something for the families. You know, you will see a drastic increase in the improvement of your dogs and of your veterans by, you know, giving those spouses, giving those family members, giving them something else to do. You know, I'm not saying copy us, but, you know, I love our family integration program. I love, you know, getting hugs from children and, you know, handshakes and hugs from family members, that, you know, and emails and pictures. And look what my husband would have never done a year ago. You know, I couldn't get him out of the basement. Now we're out on a cruise, you know, or flying all over the place and doing things and really being involved with their children and the upbringing and not, you know, not just compartmentalized and avoiding the future. And of course, there's always the pink elephant in the room, that, you know, veteran suicide is a big challenge. I hate to use the phrase, it's a national crisis. It could easily be seen as, something as is infecting every corner of the U.S., all 50 states and all its territories, they're and all over the world. I have service dogs that are on four different continents that do traveling all over the place, all over the U.S., but that's a small impact. And can they really get out there and show, and be seen and doing videos like this where, there may be a veteran who catches this video and is like, that's the one thing I did not think about, or it's the one thing I did not put weight into it. It's just because they may be in an area they haven't seen that dog, or haven't seen something, or didn't have a doctor that was wise to that type of, opportunity or assistance, however you want to look at it.
Switching gears just a little bit, what advice do you have for listeners who aspire to one day start some sort of nonprofit? Any advice you'd give to them about how to approach that?
Oh yeah. So I read this question and nobody's ever asked me like in this way, I hear about and I see about organizations, especially nonprofits that pop up all over the place, and they're invaluable, I think, to any community, as long as they're doing the right thing, and I always, my answer has pretty much always been the same, that, you do your research, make sure you're doing, I hate to steal the Hippocratic Oath or, summarize, that first do no harm, what we're doing is, it should be life changing. It should be, altering, their perception of the world. It should be assisting them in some form or fashion, So, regardless of what kind of business or what nonprofit is or whatever it is, even if it's training service dogs, don't try to reinvent the wheel. You don't need to copy, the person right next to you or this person or us or, but do your research. We spent a lot of time, preparing before we spent 9 months, pilot programming it, and started one dog at a time until we just got better and better at it. I didn't try to bite off more than I can chew. I promise it was very difficult. My wife and I went through, that Mark Cuban kind of mentality is, dude, I ate ramen noodles and we cooked in the house every day. And we, there were a couple of times the power was out, it's a tough life. You have to jump into it. My wife, she technically had the idea and said, this is what we should do. I said, well, if we're going to do it, we have to go all in. And we've always stuck that mentality. We've always got returned on our, on our efforts, and I'd love to see that continue to grow. And, for anyone out there that's potentially doing it, know that there's plenty of help out there, whether it's, organizations that provide, hey, I want to start an organization, I want to help you out, find what works best for you, something that you could stick to, don't let that dream fade away quickly because it became hard. Cause I promise it's hard every day for me. I get a pain in my chest almost every day from just every little bit of it. Cause it's so rewarding, but it knows that, I feel like a little weight lifted off my shoulder, but now I gotta be better. I gotta do better. I can't be, I can't stay in the same, I think that's the, I hate to say that's, I think the, my, what my perception of the nonprofit world was before I got into it was that it can be very lucrative, or it can be just, I'm in poverty just because I want to dump everything I can into this to be able to give back. And I love that especially veterans and anybody who's willing to help out the veteran community, that you're willing to sacrifice and I promise you will see the returns. Those stabs to the chest, those butterflies, that feeling you get gets better. It gets, but it, when you get to the point where it happens every day and you start to get addicted to it, you want to do more. And sometimes I, neglect my family, in that case, and I hate it, but my wife and I, support each other wholeheartedly. We've seen, the way that, just what we that example we're setting, I'm not trying to be I'm not trying to boast or anything like that, but I love running time I run into an organization that, you know, has a very similar story to ours and is doing that, you know. But it bugs me. It was like, oh, I could help you out, but you already did everything. I don't know. But either way, you know, get involved, find out what works great for you. You know, don't let your dream slip away. If you're going to do it, I promise you'll enjoy the rest. As long as you continue to do it, you will, and you should enjoy it, and you will enjoy it.
And I hope what comes through for listeners in this, like, I think, Chris, you're an exceptional example of someone who has found post-military service a calling. You've found a very strong purpose. You found something where you are directly seeing the impact of your work. And I hope listeners take away from this, it has not been easy. There's those times of ramen eating without power on and all these sacrifices that Chris and his family have had to make. And, you know, while he might not be flying around on corporate jets and, you know, seeing this empire building financially, he is getting a level of satisfaction that I think is rare for me to hear from people on the show or off on the show, because he is doing great things in the world. And the one thing I wanted to just kind of, one of the last questions I wanted to ask is, I want to point out to listeners, like, Chris has had an incredible journey. And the thing that's also unique about his story is he's built up a lot of career capital around what he is doing. And I was hoping, Chris, you could just walk through briefly from the Marine Corps and afterwards, could you share a little bit more about your experience with dogs, with canines, and this work in the military and then outside of it?
I mean, I could tell just a long-winded story, but I mean, there's, you know, I joined the Marine Corps right after boot camp. You know, I knew I wanted to work. I've always wanted to work with animals. I've always wanted to, you know, do something. You know, I just kind of got lucky. You know, I wanted to serve my country. I was in a Marine Corps ROTC, and I, you know, I didn't really want to go to college, you know, yet. You know, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and, you know, and I joined the Marine Corps on a whim, but I, you know, I just happened to get lucky and say, find out that there were dog handlers, you know, early on in the process. I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. That looks really, really cool, you know, and I've kind of stuck with that. You know, I did 8.5 years, you know, active duty, you know, and, you know, I spent the first year in school and, you know, finishing up at canine school and going to hitting the fleet with a dog, you know, or hitting the fleet and picking up a dog and going duty station to duty station for, you know, 8 years. And essentially I volunteered for anything. I didn't really care, whatever, wherever we're going, let's do it. I'm down. You know, I hated myself for it because I kind of looked like just too much of a follower. And when I got into leadership roles, I, you know, it was very hard to let go of, like, sure, man, I don't care. You just tell me what to do. I'm down. And it, you know, but I got to do as much as I really wanted with dogs. I got to take them, you know, all over the place, you know, including Iraq too many times, you know, but I got to see all kinds of different dogs. I had a really good career of working with a lot of good people. You know, I sometimes will give homage to that, you know, that old, you know, if I saw farther than most is because I stood on the shoulder of giants, however it was phrased. But, you know, I met a lot of really good dog trainers and dog handlers out there, you know, in every branch of the service. And I got to see, and I had I could easily copy a handler. You know, can you do this? Sure can. You know, and that just made my life really easy as a handler, you know, and along the way, I think I developed an ability to pick apart, you know, what was going wrong with the handler or how his dog was working or what could be fixed, you know, and just spent the better part of 18 years now, you know, through military and contracting and, you know, civilian world. And, you know, I trained puppies for a year and a half. That about drove me crazy, but it makes what I do now very, very easy because I know what to expect. You know, I saw enough litters, you know, come through, you know, that we're doing all kinds of different things to kind of just figure out how you can direct that dog to what makes them even better than what you want them to do. So, you know, I got stuck in the dog world and I love it. You know, I've tried to leave and I keep getting pulled back and, you know, things get better and I've got to see it evolve. And, you know, my style has evolved and I've just you know, picked up as much as I could along the way till, you know, I am where I am now, where I'm really just a problem solver. You know, all I do is make sure the bus is going in the right direction, you know, and that we're full of gas pretty much, you know. It's, and I'd love to get more back into the dog training side of it. You know, I just, I'd really tell my team that, hey, I'm just going to start doing more and more dogs. But, you know, I went from the Marine Corps, you know, contracting work, you know, for the government, you know, and then I did entomology dogs, bed bug dogs for a while. And I did, you know, managed and worked in a couple of kennels and, you know, small breeders and large breeders. And, you know, I got to be a trainer for, you know, several years before I was ever actually required to train a dog on my own. So, I mean, I got the cheap way to become, you know, a trainer, I guess. You know, that everything was pretty much given to me for free or just because of the way I was, you know, willing to do the work. You know, and I've gone from, you know, doing a lot of detection stuff, which I still love, you know, to teaching dogs to how to be the, like, a super awesome family pet that gets to go out in public and does all these cool things. And it takes a lot to manage a lot of dogs. I've never managed more, you know, 18 dogs before. And, you know, I imagine I'll be doing more as time goes on, but, it becomes busy work, a lot of the time. But my career has just been sticking with dogs, training dogs, going to every school and volunteering for everything I possibly could. So now I don't even have a dog sign to me, which is sad. I'm going to start, grabbing more dogs just so I can, you know, this is mine. I need a dog. You guys have given me dogless, kept me dogless for too long.
That's awesome. I always like to keep the last question a little bit more open-ended, which is, what have we not covered that you want to make sure listeners know before we wrap up?
I could go on for days. That's a tough one. You know what? Let me see. Not to mess up the interview at all. We've covered a ton. I love being able to do interviews like this. You know, I always try to end everything. And if it's a broken record for people who have heard me do interviews in the past or just talk about our organization, is, you know, be involved. I always say, you know, get involved no matter whether you're young, old, you know, you served, you didn't, you know, you're busy or not, you know, there, be involved in your community, you know, find something that you can give back to. You know, that's how we'll really make America great again, if you want to be honest, is, you know, everybody needs to be involved. You know, selflessness goes a long way, you know, I promise you, because selfishness goes twice as far. You know, it's, you know, it, word of mouth spreads, I promise. So, you know, if it's not getting involved, you know, find something that you love, and even through social media, if you're, you know, stuck at home and that's the only thing you can do or only thing you want to do, then, you know, I hate to promote, you know, social media by saying, hey, share this, but, you know, the interview that we're doing here, you know, I found out, I'm sure through word of mouth some way, you know, you get listeners and you get, you know, anything you get involved with is going to help the next person. You know, it takes I hate to say it again, that it takes a village, but, you know, when it comes to, you know, any advice that I can possibly give you, you know, it may be long-winded. It comes with a lot of effort. You know, it's not easy for me to get out there and do these interviews on a regular basis because I have my own challenges and desire to, I don't want to do that. So, you know, for those who are watching, you know, share this, you know, share the Beyond the Uniform, share the Beyond the Uniform name, the story, you know, share past and previous articles, interviews, everything, you know, find out what's going on in your area.
I love it. Chris, thank you for,
I'm sorry.
No, this is great. I appreciate your example of community involvement and giving back. I just really applaud you for putting yourself out there. Like, it sounds like the path that you are leading is not easy. It's not for the faint of heart. It's aligned with who you are, and it is making a dent in the universe, and I appreciate that. And I know that you've got a million demands on your time, so it means a lot that you would take time from your schedule to speak with me and the Beyond the Uniform audience. So thank you so much. And for listeners, as always, at our show notes at beyonduniform.org,
We'll have links to everything we discuss. I just want to say that website one more time. It's SemperK9, K is in kilo, 9 is in the number, .org. SemperK9.org. If you or someone you know would benefit from one of their dogs, definitely check them out. Or if Chris and his organization resonates with you, one way to get involved with your community is to check out their website. And whether it's sharing on social media, whether it's volunteering, whether it's donating, there's no shortage of ways to contribute. And maybe you're at a point in your life where you don't have time. Maybe you can donate financially, or maybe you don't have money. Maybe you can donate through intros, through sharing, through referrals, things like that. But I would encourage you to check that out. So thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks so much, bud. I appreciate it. Let me know how I can. I'm looking forward to it coming out.
Surface. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week, despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org. There is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.